Welcome to the Business of Security podcast, episode number 10. Your host is Chad Beckman. Today, he talks with Aaron Pritz of Aaron Pritz & Associates. Together, they'll recap NHISEC and discuss emerging trends in healthcare cybersecurity. Now, let's get to it.
What does the industry need to start talking about that we're not doing today?
Information technology is built on a horrible foundation. If we could sort of redo and start from the beginning, we would be so much better off.
If you don't invest in it, keep it running, it will blow up.
You also have to be able to go in with solutions, not just problems. We have a long way to go if we're going to win this fight.
At the end of the day, educated people are really the best countermeasure against all the threats.
Today's bonus episode, number 10. We're talking with Aaron Pritz, and we're going to listen to his Cliff Notes version of NHISAC, which just happened last week, started on the 14th of May. And today is Friday, the 18th of May. And we also talk more about the healthcare industry, what they should be focused on in the coming year or for the remainder of 2018, as well as what the objectives and priorities should be for this industry in 2019 looking forward. So Aaron, thank you for joining today.
Happy to be here.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about your experience at NHISAC. I know you're becoming somewhat of a veteran of this event.
Yeah. So NHISAC is one of the many ISACs around the country that really focus on exchanging threat intelligence as well as shared learnings and progress for information security, cybersecurity. NH, National Healthcare, covers pharmaceutical, which is the industry that I spent the last 17 plus years, and healthcare, health providers, so hospital networks, hospitals. As well as payers, so like health insurance providers. So those three industries and all companies come together typically twice a year. There's a conference, and then there's satellite one-day conferences in between there, and then there's a lot of working groups. Like, for example, while I was in the pharmaceutical industry, I started a risk management working group that now a gentleman from Merck is leading. And it's just a great way to learn and exchange information and not reinvent the wheel. So this was my first time to go as a provider. I was sponsored by one of the partner companies that I work with. But definitely, regardless of whether you're a provider or an industry practitioner, I've been on both sides. There's just open sharing and collaboration and networking like you cannot find anywhere else, such as, you know, RSA, where you get lost in the big sea of vendors and people with, you know, 40,000 people in the Moscone Center in San Francisco. So yeah, well worth my time.
So where was it hosted this year? Give us some context.
Yeah, so Sawgrass and near Jacksonville. So it was at that resort. They typically try to find a warmer location, Arizona, Florida. They've done Orlando. And, you know, it's the typical conference center. You don't end up getting to... I did not play golf on TPC Sawgrass, nor would my golf game be deserving of playing on TPC Sawgrass. But and it rained the whole time, so I didn't feel bad about actually attending the conference session. So that was probably a good thing.
Yeah, keeps you focused on the material.
Exactly. Yeah, so, and like anything else, I'll just say at a high level, like the sessions are pretty good, and they're, you know, I think 80-90% member driven. So you're not gonna. I mean, they do have an occasional vendor that has a specific topic, but they do a really good job of, you know, kind of not having a bunch of promotion. And it's more about, you know, if a pharmaceutical company conquers some big issue and they want to, you know, give a readout, you know, they could get a couple hundred people in there engaging in Q&A or just listening and learning about how that company solved the problem. So those are good enough. But if nothing else, there's always really good events afterwards that you can really connect with peers that you may have to call. If you run into a challenge in the future, you can call, you know, your three closest friends from the competing firms that you work at, although nobody's really competing in cyber, right? This is all about we're fighting the same enemies, the same demons, whether those be insider threats or external hackers. So that sharing is just a unique and neat thing that probably doesn't exist in a lot of other fields where competitors would never want to talk to each other, or if they do, they were trying to, you know, soak up intelligence that would be very different than kind of the perspective of cybersecurity.
Yeah, that's a wonderful thing that it exists. And I know FSISAC is actually starting next week on Monday. So they're, interestingly enough, the NH and the FSISACs are following each other this year.
Yeah, and for some of those industries that cross over, you may get a back-to-back of fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So who attends generally? I mean, you mentioned large pharmaceuticals. I assume there's going to be healthcare insurance. Are they represented?
Yep. So definitely healthcare insurance, as I mentioned, and then payer provider.
Okay.
So payer and provider. So everything from hospital networks to clinics. And usually it's from a people standpoint, it's everything from the CISO to the threat intelligence analyst that's responding to, you know, things across the wire and look, you know, SOC analysts. So it's really diverse. There's not really too many. I mean, they may have some special sessions ahead of the conference, but it's not one of those, like, we're going to segregate everyone into their class, you know, like CISOs go here. I mean, it's really all mixed together. So there's a lot of interaction.
Very cool. So given your experience at NHISAC this year, what were some of the themes people were presenting on? Was there an overall theme for the conference in terms of content or topic?
So I would say there's always several different tracks. And one of the tracks would be things like ICS manufacturing. You've got medical device and IoT. So those are kind of two tracks that a lot of specific people that are in businesses that have those risks gravitate to. And then there's typically technical sessions and then kind of business process and operation sections. You know, I would say it was a little bit of golf theme. You know, obviously you're at a golf course, but overall they're pretty consistent in following those tracks and bringing the most current sharing and information to bear from that perspective.
And so what are a couple of sessions? Do you mind sharing what you attended or what you took away?
So one of the keynote sessions was the CEO of Hancock Hospital, as well as a local incident response firm to Indianapolis. So Indianapolis is my hometown and where I'm based out of. And then a law firm as well. So Hancock County, if you didn't hear or didn't remember, was one of the hospitals that got hit with ransomware. I think it was WannaCry, one of the outbreaks of that. So basically they got bricked and lost a lot of their key capabilities. And it was a interesting talk and an interesting situation because they were one of the, I guess the contention was that they paid the ransom. And it was interesting to hear the CEO's perspective on managing that risk. And he shared some of the data. So I think it was around 50K, 60K in Bitcoin, or the potential to lose $1 million a day in revenue and you know, money that's coming in from operating that hospital. So I don't think they had a complete outage, but they did. He did comment that they basically had gone back to paper medical records, right? You can only sustain that for so long. But obviously, you know, there's a lot of people that kind of scoffed at the, you know, why'd you pay the ransom? It's kind of like in the US, you know, there's always the saying, we don't negotiate with terrorists. And you think about ransom and you're funding more cyber terrorism, I guess. But obviously when you got patient lives at risk and you're trying to figure out if you should pull the trigger on paying something, I would say nominal in the grand scheme of things, even if that ransom payment didn't actually unlock the data, like similar to the NotPetya outbreak, there was 0% chance that would have worked because the code that wiped the boot sectors of the, you know, the disk drives was not designed to recover that data ever. Like, so it all depends on, you know, do you trust your attacker? You know, are they asking for something reasonable? I think generally you wouldn't pay, but basically this guy's takeaway was he would do it again if he had to. It was the right decision with all the data and the risk that he had in mind. The other interesting dynamic was it was interesting to hear the three of them talk about they were all very calm gentlemen. So obviously you can think about chaos that may ensue when something like this is happening. But it was interesting to hear that some of their patients said after the fact that they didn't even know anything was going on, right? So
wow.
You got to give it to the organization that was able to somehow, you know, it sounds like they had a pretty good disaster recovery plan or business, you know, probably more so the business continuity plan. How do nurses that maybe are 25 years old and never really saw paper charts before, how do you think about toggling back to that? And he really called out the older nurses that basically all of their old training of medical records on paper, they had to pull all that back out and try to keep the business running smoothly. And, you know, that got me thinking after the conference or after the talk, what are we going to do in 10, 20 years when the nurses of the day, you know, the workforce turns over eventually and nobody's used to doing anything on paper, right? So I think that for me was just like contingency planning and business continuity is critical regardless of the business. Like you need to be thinking about what you will do if you don't have the electronic assets that you do today and probably take for granted.
Yeah, very interesting use case there. And I guess it would really emphasize for anyone listening the necessity to have not only a good incident response plan, everybody should have that today, but a data breach response plan that coincides with your business continuity plan together.
Absolutely. And I would also say, you know, if you think about where do you focus, right? You probably can't have a detailed plan for everything. And I think that comes back to risk management. So within your business, let's stay on the hospital front. Do you know what your most sensitive data is? Do you know what IT applications and business processes, if they were knocked offline, would be most critical? And do you know if data was manipulated? You think about integrity. If a hack or a malicious insider, you know, got in and started manipulating data for nefarious purposes, you know, what impact would that have and what would you do? And all that comes back to risk management, and it's difficult, but you think about, you need to understand from a business standpoint what your biggest crisis modes may be so you can develop the right incident response plan and risk management actions out of that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. What were some other themes or case studies that you may have listened to?
So one of the things that I find interesting, and I think that this is kind of underscoring why there's been more attacks in healthcare, is just the value of the healthcare data. In traditional financial threat terms, you wouldn't think, you know, you can steal a medical record and do anything with it other than potential embarrassment. But I learned and have done a little bit of research on that medical records typically are 10 to 20 X times the value of a consumer credit card or basically identity theft data. So obviously I started asking the question, well, why is that? And there's just so much more with a health record you can do to either cause identity theft, sell the information. There's a lot in healthcare of falsifying claims. So fake claims for drugs or fake claims for medical services, and with the right health records, you can actually, as a bad guy, you can achieve that. Additionally, you know, typically social security number is still in a lot of medical records, although I think a lot of companies across all industries are trying to, you know, minimize use of that wherever possible. But just the value of that information, the importance, what you can do with it, it unfortunately is just so desirable that I think you're seeing a lot of the fraudsters and the scammers, even though it's a little probably more complex to do some of the levels of fraud than just sell a credit card number. I think people are seeing the 10 to 20X value and realizing, hey, this is data we need to go after. And then also you think about a lot of hospitals are not prioritizing or just starting to prioritize cybersecurity. In the past, you know, you would probably, if you were a hospital administrator, face a decision like, are you going to buy another Da Vinci surgery robot, or are you going to put, you know, the millions of dollars that would take into cybersecurity? But obviously, all this equipment can't operate if it's not reliable, up and running, or the data is there. So I think the tide's starting to change, but we're still kind of at the early cusps from a healthcare standpoint.
Now, when you say healthcare, is it fair to say that the healthcare providers of hospitals I'm speaking about are probably the most behind in the healthcare industry?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to generalize, but if you think about who was attacked first, typically the big action comes after major events. And I think I would probably say that Payer, you know, with the Anthem breach, that they may have been the first. Pharma has always had insider threat, and they, you know, for those that for those companies that are cognizant of it, and you know, obviously there's always been some nation state risk. Actually, Merck was the first big event with NotPetya that took a lot of their operations offline for an extended period of time from an availability standpoint. So I think at hospitals, you see small breaches, you see lost PHI, a stolen laptop. There's been all of that stuff, but that's why I think it was really good to have the, you know, the CEO of a small to mid-sized hospital that kind of gave his testimony of what he learned, what he knew ahead of the breach, how he thinks differently after the breach. But yeah, I think back to your question, I think, you know, it's probably fair to assume, you don't like to assume in this industry, but assume that the hospitals are maybe the ones that have the most catching up to do, and probably the least resources, actually.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. You know, their profit margins are certainly not the same as a healthcare insurance company or a pharmaceutical company. Moving on from there, what does the future, the remaining of 2018 look like for you know, maybe the NHISAC members or the healthcare industry as a whole, and what should this industry be focused on when looking forward and planning 2019?
I'm a true believer in risk management, and I think across the board, not exclusive to healthcare, I think information security groups and CISOs have been kind of plagued with so many different technical tools and solutions, and you know, everyone offering AI and machine learning that will magically easy button your risk away. And I think there's a lot of unnecessary spend, wasted spend, investments that never see the potential that was promised. And a lot of this comes back to one, not having enough time and resources, even if you have the money to fully execute on what your vision is. But I think it's, you know, really stems down to lack of prioritization. And in this space, you will not solve all the risks. You will not mitigate for all the risks. But how do you get to a better way to understand the risks for your business? And I use those words very intentionally, for your business, not for your technology. So I think you've got to start with the fundamentals and risk management. And regardless of whether it's this year, 2019, 2020, I think if companies are not doing this and finding more effective ways to do this, they're going to be lost, and they're going to underachieve their value, which is in this space is to reduce as much risk as possible.
So how does a company go about, in your opinion, kind of getting those prioritizations in place, prioritizing the risk? How do you go about doing that? Because I think you're right when you said prioritizing the business risk, not prioritizing the technology risk, which oftentimes we can get over-focused on technology.
Right. So for me, what I've done with companies is focus on the conversation with business leaders. If you need proxies to get to the leaders, that's okay. But the better you can ingrain with, like, we're going to have a conversation just like they would in any kind of disaster recovery conversation. We're going to have a specific conversation about your business, and it's going to segue into cyber conversations or security conversations, but I don't even want to start with that. So first, understanding, you know, do you have different divisions? Which leaders do you need to talk to? Have that conversation about what worries them most. Figure out what assets, and when I say assets, I mean IT assets, business processes, data, unstructured data. What's in scope of those things that worry them most, and then kind of ladder down from there. And once you understand what your targets are, you may be able to prioritize to say, we're going to focus on the top five areas or the top five assets or the top five risk elements, and figure out how our investment will reduce risk to that. Clearly, you're going to have some investments that would reduce risk for the entire company across the board, but a lot of these investments focus on specific data, specific users, specific behavior. So sometimes you've got to divide and conquer and not do it in a haphazard way. Do it in a way that's going to reduce the most risk the fastest.
So looking forward, you believe that the industry generally needs to be more focused on prioritizing their efforts based on risks that impact the business.
Yeah, I'd say prioritizing and measuring, because what happens if you do upfront prioritization and then you go into execution mode for a year or 2 years, things change around you. So companies can have acquisitions that could completely change their business risk landscape. So it's not like a one-time, you know, October before the next year, you're doing this a one-time thing and then you're making all your plans and then you're executing it and seeing if you finished your projects or not. It's more of like a continuous risk management thing. You don't want to haphazardly change all the time, but you've got to have your heads up on this. It can't be a paper exercise once a year and then you kind of feel good all year.
Yeah, exactly. Is there anything else you'd like to leave our listeners with from your experience at NHISAC or generally your experience being in this industry for 17 years?
Yeah, I mean, I would say this industry or cybersecurity is all about balance. And I find the companies or the leaders that don't have the balance, and I'll get to maybe a few different examples of that, struggle the most or make the least progress. So when I say balance, it actually plays out in a lot of fronts. So for one, we talk about people, process, technology. I see, you know, on LinkedIn discussions or in industry forums, these tribal wars of people that are like, we shouldn't do user awareness training because the users are stupid and nobody ever learns. Or people still click the links on the phishes. And so they kind of write off all that and say the tools are going to fix it all. And then conversely, some leaders, some thinkers, some companies say, okay, we're going to put all our efforts into people. And then they don't, you know, leverage technology that could help people either reduce their errors or detection capabilities that can catch things, assuming you can't prevent them in the first place. So I think from, and then process, you know, I'll speak to that a bit. You know, and again, I'm a Six Sigma black belt, certified black belt, so I'm a little bit biased. I believe in process and I believe in lean process. And if you have processes that are critical, that are haphazard and not defined and not leaned out to make efficient, you're going to have a lot of errors. You're going to have a lot of mistakes, and mistakes do lead to security events. So I think as a leader in cybersecurity, as a leader in healthcare, leaders in general, business leaders that are supporting cybersecurity efforts, I think they need to think about getting that balance right and making investments that are going to touch on people, process, technology. And then I think we've talked, you know, at length today about the balance of risk of where you're focusing your efforts and what business risks you're most worried about. I think that's another balancing game that you have to play. And as long as you understand that you're playing a balancing game, not trying to solve world hunger and do it all, I think you can keep your heads up in this world, in this game, and you can make good decisions that will reduce the most risk. But I've seen a lot of swirl that happens in this space. And I think if you aren't cognizant of every day you're making balanced decisions on this, I think you're going to get stuck or slowed.
Well said. Well said. Well, thank you, Aaron, for spending some time with us today and sharing your insights, not only about the experience at NHISAC, the 2018 summit, but also the healthcare industry and generally the cybersecurity industry as a whole. Aaron, if our listeners want to get a hold of you and continue this conversation, how might they do so?
Yeah, so a couple ways. First, I'm really big on LinkedIn. Use it a lot. I think it's a great networking opportunity. The platform's really blown up, and you know, I use it as an industry news source because it pretty much bridges me into many content sources and many leaders in the way that they're thinking. Secondly, I've got a website for my business, Aaron Pritz and Associates, and it's just Aaron, A-A-R-O-N, Pritz, PRITZ.com. And yeah, that should be two great ways to stay connected.
Yeah, appreciate the time and look forward to the next conversation.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Business of Security podcast. A special thanks to today's guest, Aaron Pritz of Aaron Pritz and Associates. Our host today was Chad Beckman, founder and CEO of Secure Digital Solutions. You can connect with Chad on LinkedIn and learn more about Secure Digital Solutions at trustsds.com. Our show was produced by Dan Rollins with LiveWire Films. You can find Dan on LinkedIn and learn more about LiveWire Films at livewirefilms.com. And that's a wrap for Season 1. Stay tuned in the coming weeks for a preview of Season 2, releasing fall of 2018.